This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. About 200 people crowded into a Grove District bar in St. Louis this past Saturday. It was a culinary event of particularly high quality, the second annual STL Pot Chef competition. This event, billed as the ultimate infused showdown, brought together 12 competitors from across the region. Contestants presented sweet takes on classics like marijuana brownies and dream-inducing treats. Chefs also brought out entrees and sides with a weedy fusion twist.
My name is Alvin Jackson. I go by Chef Weedy. I'm the owner of Oven Canvas Bakery. So first we have our caramel fudge brownies. People love those, they're like a customer favorite. They're 200 milligrams, these ones. You can't really taste the cannabis because it's made with THC powder, which all of the desserts are. So that customers really like not tasting it. And then our competition dish today is a raspberry lemonade gooey butter cake.
My name is Mike. I work for a company known as Dragon Biscuits. So today for the competition, we have a medicated banana split bonbon, all homemade. We homemade the ice cream ourselves. That's infused. The chocolate shell is a CBN infused chocolate shell. So it's going to give you some nice nighttimeies. And we've got a strawberry sauce homemade by us that we're going to put on top that is very tart and it brings out the flavor of the entire dish. It's actually a journey of over 20 years. I joined Normal in college because I wanted to reform those marijuana laws. And once it became legal in Missouri, I basically stopped what I was doing in the AV industry and was like, hey, I'm going to join the cannabis industry. And while there, I learned to grow. And then from growing, I decided, hey, I know how to cook stuff. I found a buddy who was willing to help me live out that dream.
My name is Desiree Rogers, and I am running the Witch's Buds booth. What I am entering into the main dish competition is a honey garlic chicken over rice. This is actually the dish I started making edibles with. I think it's the yummiest one that I make, and because it is with infused honey. So that was easier to do than infused butter. I find with like infused butter, the weed overpowers the flavor, whereas with honey, there's still the sweetness there and you don't get too much of like the earthy flavor.
I'm Chef Terry Jane, owner of Gateway Grub. We have infused mac and cheese. I have honey goguchan wing sauce. I also have peanut butter jelly wings, which are gonna be a part of the competition. That's a Thai peanut sauce and a hot pepper jelly. My show me squares and the peanut butter jelly time wings are really going to what the people, because it's the show me squares are an homage to the hill, to us eating wontons and crab ragoons. So it's all wrapped in one, like a ravioli and a wonton. It's going to be outstanding. I can't wait.
Those were the voices of Chefs Terry Jane of Gateway Grub, Mike Zumwalt of Dragon Biscuits, Desiree Rogers from Witch's Buds, and Alvin Jackson of Oven Canvas. They all spoke with producer Danny Wisentowski. And by popular vote, Gateway Grub's Terry Jane made good on her promise to wow attendees with her flavors and won the award for Most Innovative Chef. St. Louis Public Radio visuals editor Brian Munoz was also at the competition. You can see his photos, which include Terry Jane's cannabis-infused candied Sichuan pepper eggplant over jasmine rice and cilantro. The photos will be up later today on our website. That's stlpr.org. Now, not too long ago, this scene, a private but openly advertised event where cannabis chefs serve paying adult customers, would have been unthinkable. It's been barely 2 years since Missouri's first recreational cannabis sales, but there's no denying just how big this industry has become and how quickly it's expanded. Last year, it generated more than $1.4 billion, and about 120,000 people are registered as patients in Missouri's medical marijuana program. But those soaring numbers don't tell the full story. So to look through the smoke, as it were, I'm joined again by cannabis industry reporter for the Missouri Independent, Rebecca Rivas. Rebecca, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
We'd also like to invite you to our conversation. Whether you're a consumer, patient, or business owner, we want to hear about your experience of Missouri's cannabis industry. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. All right, so Rebecca, we're going to talk about a massive recall and the cannabis microbusiness program, which has had a lot of problems. But to start, let's talk about the dough. This is a massive amount of money coming from the cannabis industry. Now, I mentioned the $1.4 billion in sales last year, and that amount came with about $250 million in sales tax. Rebecca, remind us about where that money is supposed to go.
Right. Well, so that is a little bit of everything. There's some state general revenue in there that will just go into the big pot of funds for everything. There's local sales tax, and then some of the municipalities, such as St. Louis, had a 3% sales tax that goes directly to their funds. But there is a 6% state adult use sales tax, and that goes to basically to fund the program, any kind of administrative costs. And after that, it goes to three funds, which are the Veterans Commission, the Public Defender System, and then it goes towards grants to fund prevention of substance use. So, yeah, I think this year was a big year. Absolutely. When the legislature sat down this January, they got kind of a briefing from the Division of Cannabis Regulation that regulates the system and says, you know, we have $86 million to put into these funds, you know, to divide up into the three. The lawmakers still have the authority and responsibility to give the okay for them to spend that money. And that's why it does go through the legislative process. And that's where we are currently.
So last month, Rebecca, you wrote about an ongoing debate among state lawmakers who are trying to figure out how to spend this money. And specifically, there was a kind of a tangle over funding of public defenders, which you cited. What is it that happened there?
Right. Well, you know, so like I mentioned, each of the agencies have to go still in front of the legislature and say, this is how we want to spend the money. And the public defenders, they had wanted to spend the money on a holistic defense, which would go towards basically social workers would be sent throughout the state to help public defenders to do things like get people into drug prevention programs and things like that. Currently, you know, things that the attorneys do themselves, but is definitely meant for a social worker to do. So just to add those resources there. And then it would also increase salaries for the beginning pay for a public defender to be at the same level as the attorney general's office intro salary. So, yeah, there was just a little tangle about them getting that full funds in the House. Then it went into the Senate, and I believe that they have gotten what they've asked for. Currently, they will have to kind of figure it out between the Senate and the House. They'll conference together before, you know, it goes for a final vote and the governor signs it. So it's a little bit in limbo still.
Yeah. And just to clarify then, that state lawmakers, they have the authority to decide whether to withhold the money, even if it's not going to be spent anywhere else?
Yeah, so that's the very interesting part. This is all laid out in the Constitution, right? You know, we voted on it. This is in the constitutional language. That money cannot go to any other purpose. So it goes into those three funds. It can't go to education or something else. The only authority that lawmakers have is to allow them to spend it or not. You know.
Okay. So they're holding the purse strings then.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think this was one of the concerns that some of the opponents had when it was going out into among the voters in the campaign. People were raising some concerns about, well, you know, lawmakers, those who don't really feel that great about cannabis in general, they could just choose to not agree to allow them to spend certain things. So, you know, it's bringing up old feelings, I think.
Now, you've also spoken a number of times with Amy Moore, and she's the director of the Missouri Division of Cannabis Regulation. And in March, she had said that the funds available for the ultimate beneficiaries of the cannabis regulatory program continue to outpace expectations. So what we're hearing there is Amy Moore saying that they're having trouble with having more money than they anticipated or planned for?
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, every year through the budget process, they say, I think we're going to have this much. And they do a regular budget bill to say, you're going to end up getting this much. And then at the end of the year, oh my gosh, we had so much more money than we thought. And mm-hmm. so we have to put a supplemental budget bill together to give you that extra money. And so that's basically what the House was looking at today, this past few months, was giving additional money. And I think that was $11.7 million that they each got in the supplemental that they didn't plan for. Mm-hmm. And in addition to, I think it was $28.6 million just through regular budget bills.
Yeah.
So.
And to put a finer point on it, then what kinds of challenges is that creating, like to have more than you thought would come in?
I think for the people who are getting it, not many. Mm-hmm. I think that the veterans are very happy because I think some of their homes are having challenges with roofs and things like that. I think definitely the public defenders would like to get a good starting salary. And, you know, I think that these substance use prevention programs are doing great. They've got some new partnerships with the Supreme Court or state courts throughout the state. So I think it's more just the legislature is not used to handling so much money and being like, you know what? Go ahead.
Yeah. So another side of the cannabis industry has to do with something that we had led with in some of our promos, and that had to do with the revocation of licenses. So last week that you reported that regulators had revoked 25 cannabis microbusiness licenses, or rather another 25 licenses. So can you give us some background on that and why those licenses were revoked?
Right. Well, so the microbusiness license program, that was part of the what was called Amendment 3 to legalize recreational cannabis. And it was definitely something that people were excited about. This was a license that was to go to people who may have had an offense of marijuana offense on their records so that they could enter into the marijuana industry legally. Or, you know, there's also veterans, people who live in low income areas, is really just hoping to have mend a disparity in the people who are participating in the cannabis industry currently. Wanted to, you know, give a leg up for some of the small business owners. Mm-hmm. And I think basically what we're seeing is what the state would call alleged predatory practices mm-hmm. in the way that people are applying for those currently.
And as far as the numbers go, so in April 2025, there had been 96 microbusiness licenses issued by the state, and then regulators took a chunk of those, right? 34 licenses revoked then. And then the first 9 revocations happened last year after the state's first lottery. So, I mean, if we look at what has happened with what has been taken and the reasons, you talked about the predatory practices. What are those predatory practices? I mean, how, as a reminder again, mm-hmm. how were folks being preyed upon?
Right. So, as you know, I reported for the St. Louis American newspaper for 11 years. And one of the big things that I did there was follow minority participation and publicly funded projects. This is all very similar to what, you know, federal, state, local programs who look to try to mend a disparity in publicly funded either contracts or, you know, trying to give award people an opportunity in an industry. When I started to obtain agreements, I saw that the first one, it was that the person would get a couple $1,000s to just apply. And I think he had maybe an offense on it, marijuana offense on his criminal record. Mm-hmm. So he was eligible for the license. And then when he got it, he would get another $20,000. But then he had to sell the license over to the cannabis investor who had approached him for $1. Another license, they didn't get anything to apply, but they said that they would just get 9% of the profits, and then they just wouldn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. In the Constitution for the microbusiness program, it says that these licenses have to be majority owned and operated mm-hmm. by the person who applied. And so, when I just look back through some of the experience I had looking through publicly funded projects and things like that, if there was, like, say, on a federal project, like, say, the Arch, and the contractor there was says, I am going to employ this minority business for a certain amount of the project, and instead they only give them, like, a little fee and say, I'll do the whole work.
Right.
And, you know, you just get a little paid, but I still get the contract because mm-hmm. That is actually a criminal offense under federal law. It's not a criminal offense in, you know, for this state program, but the repercussions that the authority has for the cannabis regulators to deal with it is to revoke the license. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you're seeing. Yeah. They read the contract, just like I read these contracts, and said, oh, you know, that doesn't meet the majority owned and operated requirement in the Constitution.
Yeah, 1 or 9% certainly is not. We need to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the state of Missouri's cannabis industry. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma. Architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at jemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about Missouri's cannabis industry. We're talking with Rebecca Rivas, who reports on that industry for the Missouri Independent. Now, before the break, Rebecca, we were talking about the issues that have continued to plague Missouri's cannabis industry and its microbusiness, the microbusiness program, that is, in particular. And before the break, we'd mentioned how 34 licenses for these microbusinesses have been revoked, and that's not far off from a third of the total number, which leaves about 60 licenses that have not been revoked. You've spent more than a year, Rebecca, looking into this program, but you write that it is plagued by allegations of predatory practices, and I'll say allegations here of predatory practices, and that these practices involve a kind of sham recruitment, as you described before the break, for people to appear as though they are owners of the business. So this scheme, you know, how is it supposed to work?
Right. So how this scheme for recruitment, for, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I think what I saw was they were going on social media and they were offering, you know, hey, this is an easy opportunity for you to just make a little extra money. You don't have to do anything. You just sit at home and let the paycheck come in. And then I did speak to people who sat down with investors, and some people actually really wanted to be part of the business, and they were told that they would be allowed to. But that's not what ended up happening mm-hmm. Because the contract said that they would have to give over control almost immediately. So I think... I think what the state did was to try to curtail that before those licenses went out and mm-hmm. were issued officially.
Right. There's a particular investor whose name has come up in your investigation of this process, and that's Michael Harlow. He's connected to 22 licenses that have been revoked, and that includes licenses that were revoked just last week. What is his role, Michael Hallow, that is, what is his role in this? You know, does he have an explanation?
Well, I think he has explained that he respectfully disagrees with the division's decision to revoke the licenses, and he has planned to appeal. And so that's 16 licenses this past week that were revoked that he's connected to. He was also connected to 6 in the first round, which was last year, or 2023. And so he has appealed those licenses. So basically, it just enters into several year process of appeal, going to in front of the Administrative Hearing Commission to argue their case. But he believes that they're providing assistance to the different applicants. And he says that these are people without generational wealth or experience as an entrepreneur. They open businesses, neighborhoods, and in need of jobs and economic opportunity. So I think he feels like, you know, well, they're getting something, you know?
I mean, to what extent does he have a point? I mean, starting a business, opening a business, it does take a lot of knowledge. It does take resources. I mean, is he just being someone who's helpful?
Well, you know, what's interesting about Michael Hallow is that this is not the only state that he's operated in. He has these similar kind of what they call social equity cannabis licenses in Arizona, California, and the East Coast as well. And so I think in different states have different laws. Missouri, it is the law that it has to be majority owned and operated. Mm-hmm. And that's a real specific phrase that the cannabis regulators have to abide by. They're constitutionally obligated to. So even if maybe in another state they don't have that, and he can argue a case saying, you know, they're getting something and we really are providing all of what they need to start this up, it has to be done in a very specific way in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to weeding those wily, wily actors, if we could put it that way, Amy Moore, again, the director of the Missouri Division of Cannabis Regulation, she's talked about the problems in this program, and you quote her from a February town hall when she said that it's not sustainable to keep going through rounds of license issuance than having to do rounds of revocations. So is she then saying, Rebecca, that at a certain point, like, we can't keep doing this over and over again? Or is it more akin to, we're going to keep doing this over again until it's fixed?
I think they're at the point where the people who have already gotten the licenses, they need to get up and going. You know, the more time that they're sitting around is they're basically losing money, and they can't really get up and running if they keep getting licenses revoked. So like it's such a intertwined ecosystem.
Right, right.
The cultivators need to be able to have enough dispensaries open in order to thrive. Mm-hmm. And the dispensaries definitely need to have enough cultivators open to thrive. And this kind of upsets that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really challenging for the business owners who are hoping to make this work currently with this happening.
And is there a fix, you know, in the pipeline?
Yeah. So they did offer a draft of what they would like to see presented to the Missouri Secretary of State as an official rule. And that will go through the whole process, months-long process. It would definitely go before a committee of lawmakers, legislators as well. But it's basically, you know, they're trying to fix some of the loopholes in the agreements that they saw, you know, just fix some of the things that keep people in the dark about what they signed. I guess I would, you know, there's a lot more technicalities of that, of how they are hoping to propose it, but that came out in December. They opened it up to the public to comment for about a month. Now they're reviewing all those public comments to see which ones they want to incorporate, or if they even want to move forward or not. So we're going to see that in the next couple months, I would say, whether they are going to go ahead and decide to move forward, or, you know, or if they're going to go ahead and have the third round of lottery and just hope that everything's okay.
Sure.
If they do go ahead, that would delay the last lottery that they're required to have by the Constitution.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Rebecca, given all of the time that you've spent investigating this very particular corner of the Missouri cannabis industry, with the cycle of licenses being revoked, what are the questions that you are still trying to answer, or are there certain loopholes that you're focusing on?
Well, you know, for me, it's really, there's this puzzle piece that is part of a bigger puzzle piece nationwide. Mm-hmm. And so these players don't just stay here in Missouri. They're off as well in Minnesota, which is also had to pause their program because they couldn't really deal with the amount of challenges they were going to face with the exact same situation. Arizona, California, you know, I think what I would love to do eventually is just to kind of see where everybody's moving to, what kind of success they've had in the different states. And and the first state I went to was Illinois. That's actually how I ended up finding the folks that came to Missouri. So it all is very helpful. And I, you know, maybe when I have a couple free months after the legislature relaxes.
So we talked about recalls in our introduction. You also have an update on a massive recall of various cannabis items. And the recall actually happened 2 years ago, and it now continues. What is going on with this?
Yes, I think what ended up happening was this was the first. You know, this is a young program, and this was their first massive recall. And maybe at the time, they didn't have everything lined up in their technical program or all of the people they needed to, maybe. And so it just got missed, you know. And so now, once basically the group Delta Extraction, they've gone through the appeal process and lost in February, and now, or was it March? One of these in spring. And now, you know, they had to go back through all the recalled products as part of that decision that came out of the Administrative Hearing Commission. And when they were doing that, they noticed that there was these 6,000 recall products that weren't added to the list. And so, yes, they had to come back out with them, and it has definitely impacted businesses who didn't know.
Yeah. You know? So. That's a lot of product. I mean, you report that the units remaining on hold, they've not been destroyed, and the sum of those items is nearly 157,000. What happens to these? I mean, what are stores supposed to do with that much inventory?
I think that's a big question. They were allowed to destroy it, I think, in October, kind of soon after the recall. I think it's kind of a big process to destroy that. You have to do it on video. You have to make sure you, of course, get permission from the state. And it's actually a very expensive process. So, you know, I think some of them, if they had space, they were just holding on to them to see about the decision and maybe just haven't gotten to it yet. Or, yeah, but I think there's a lot in limbo still about that. And I think we'll learn more what happens to all of those products probably here in the near future.
Yeah. So this coverage that you're doing on the cannabis industry moves on a rolling basis, if you'll pardon the pun. What are you looking at next or watching for, specifically as we approach, you know, the three-year anniversary of Missouri voters saying, yes, cannabis should be legalized for adult recreational use?
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm probably looking at is just what does our industry look like overall and who owns it? I would say that is a big question mark. And I think a lot of people have a lot of opinions about it. So I think that will be my summer project for sure.
Okay. Rebecca Rivas reports on the Missouri cannabis industry for the Missouri Independent. Rebecca, it's great to have you on the show as always.
Oh, as well. I love talking with you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.